Is this the reading room?
Yes, I'm Saad Manzoor.
And I'm Travis Howard.
This is Reading Room Talk. Thanks for pressing play. Welcome, welcome.
Yeah, thanks everybody. Thanks for coming back.
Oh yeah, thank you for coming back. Welcome, man. We have a superstar guest today. So, you know, me and Travis got next. We stepped on the basketball court. We're about to get tossed up by Dr. Brandon Hicks. How are you?
I'm doing great, thank you.
We appreciate you making the time. Welcome. Thank you so much.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Oh, no problem, no problem. So tell us, take us back to med school. Tell us, what was your toughest class or rotation in medical school?
Oh, man. I'm sure like everybody, it feels like eons ago. I think if I had to pick a class, it was probably like first year biochem. I have to say that because I didn't do biochem in college. I'm like, all right, you know? And yeah, that first week I was like, all right, yeah, I think I understand what C equals MD now. Like, I get that. I'm like, all right, man, I'm here to survive. So yeah, I think that was the toughest one. Just, you know, I don't know, grasping all of that and kind of, you know, the whole metaphor or whatever of drinking from a fire hose is like, so if I had to go back, that was probably the most, okay, this is for real, you know? But if I had to pick that would probably be the main one.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. You know, biochem, you know, I went to school at Case. You know, our biochem, like, I guess the main person had, like, won a Nobel Prize. So there's, like, a lot of, like, intimidation around it. Like, your first main, you know, it's like, your first, like, main class. It's, like, very intimidating.
Sure.
And some people didn't even take biochem in undergrad. I don't even know if it helps. I don't think it helps at all. I think.
Yeah, maybe not.
And let's talk about how it doesn't help now.
Exactly, right? Like,
like, really? Crib cycle? No, we don't use any of that.
Yeah.
I think it's just the gauntlet, right? It's just like, it's like tradition or something. I don't know about like having to get through the process and say you did it. It's just, it's one of the sticking points, I think.
It really is. It really is.
All what it is. It's hazing.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
It really is. It's what it feels like the whole time. So, well, tell us, take us back. Take us back to where you're from, where you grew up, and where's your family from?
Yeah. So, I guess I'm what you call an army brat. So, my parents, they actually got together, got married, and had me at 16 and 18. So, very young. My parents are from Arizona, from Tucson, Arizona, and they went to high school together. And they had me and my dad join the army like immediately. You know, I spent kind of the first 18 years of my life moving around to different places. Unfortunately, the first place was Fort Polk, Louisiana, but I don't remember it. Thankfully, that was a bit of an experience for them in the late 70s, being an interracial couple, I think. But
Indiana, wow. Yeah.
So, I mean, my dad's family side's all from, like, my dad's dad's side's from New Orleans. So, like, there's that connection, but not in, like, Fort Polk, Louisiana. Like, it's just it's a different experience.
Yeah.
So, so that was the first. And I think we had my dad had a couple like overseas tours, you know, Germany. We lived in Germany when I was really little, and he did a couple unaccompanied tours. But long story short, I went to high school in Augusta, Georgia, or just outside of Augusta, Georgia. And I went to college at UNC Charlotte, which was in, I guess, yeah, Conference USA at the time.
Yeah.
And then I went to med school at Uniformed Services University in Bethesda, Maryland. So
I see. Well, tell us. We got to take us back a little bit here. So tell us, you had a special talent that took you to college there. So how did you get interested in basketball and all the athletic stuff?
Yeah. So I think both of my parents grew up playing sports. Like, my mom was all-star softball. My dad was baseball. Nobody was pretty much basketball. And I actually started playing baseball first. Like, in Germany, I was like the only pitcher, only girl on an all boys baseball team. I was the pitcher. So, like, was just always around, like, you know, around sports growing up. And then I just picked up basketball, I think probably like fourth grade, maybe. And it just kind of stuck. Yeah. And I just kind of started playing both. And then, like I said, I went to high school in Georgia, and like basketball was huge in my town. And my parents, you know, we realized, like, my high school coach ended up visiting me in eighth grade and was like, yo, like, where are you you know, where are you like supposed to go to high school? And he was one of the best coaches in the area. So my parents, man, we actually moved so I could go to the high school I did.
Wow.
Yeah, it was huge. Lots of sacrifices. I can't speak highly enough about what my parents did for me. But so, yeah, and that really worked out. And I kind of became a one sport, you know, athlete at that point, just trying to focus on, you know, playing ball in college and hopefully getting school paid for. So
oh, that's all awesome.
That worked out.
Oh, that's really good. That's really good. Now, how did you find like kind of balancing like schoolwork and like, you know, all the practice time and game time? How was that for you in high school?
Yeah, so I think I probably, my parents always said I overdid it. Like, maybe from the will from them, just like the fear of not being successful, I like kind of went into overdrive with that. So I knew like school was super important, and I knew I, you know, I could potentially get school paid for by academics, but the thought of being able to do that with sports was awesome. So yeah, I think I learned, you know, time management and like the hustle, like really early. And that, you know, that led into college. Obviously got much more difficult in college, but yeah, I was just trying to be, I guess, multifaceted, and, you know, some things, I guess, you know, it was like, oh, am I going to do like Quiz Bowl this week, or am I going to a game? And I'm like, I got to go to a game. Right. So it was like trying to balance those things and figuring out very early, like how to be like, you know, how to do those things and, you know, make time for everything.
Oh, that's
cool. So Dr. Henry, your parents pretty strict?
Yeah, they were. And I'm thankful, because I think, you know, being teenage parents, you could probably go one or two ways, right? And
good point.
Yeah, and they went the opposite way, which my sister, who's about 5.5 years younger, we all joke, so like, you know, probably staunched my creativity because they were like so strict. And you know, as kids, you know, more and more kids, they probably get less and less strict. So but yeah, like I think, yeah, they were strict and they knew like what was important. I think for them too is like they told me early on, like we can't pay for your school. Like you gotta figure this out, and it's gonna come from you hustling and working really hard. We know you're smart, but you gotta do it. So I knew there was different avenues. Like I was in junior ROTC in high school. That was a big thing in the South, and I was like, okay, maybe I can go to West Point or something like that. But once basketball, like that's what I really wanted to, you know, not that there wasn't basketball at West Point, but like I really wanted to get an athletic scholarship at a school that was like, you know, playing, and that was kind of the main purpose. So yeah, they just kind of instilled in me like, hey, you know, you got to find a way to you know, accomplish things that, you know, we didn't do, you know, we had it set out on a different path, but we want that success for you. So, but they were very upfront. They're like, look, see, there's going to be scholarships or loans or grants, and we'll help you with that. But that's kind of where we're at. So
it's awesome. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's good. I mean, it's good to just know.
Yeah, for sure.
How did your parents know they wanted to go into, your dad wanted to go into the armed forces? Was there a legacy of that?
So for me, or you mean for my dad going in?
For him, and then how that affected you.
Yeah, so it's interesting. I think my dad's dad and my mom's dad are both veterans. And so my dad's dad was, he retired in the Air Force. And then my mom's dad was in the Navy. He didn't retire, but I knew there was a history of that. And then, you know, with my dad knowing his father did that, I think he felt it was a good opportunity for him. I think also, you know, he was a young dad, and that was an opportunity for him to take care of his family. Mm-hmm. So he saw that as an opportunity, and he ended up doing 20 years and retiring. So I knew like being close to that, and like junior ROTC in high school, I was like, okay, that's an avenue as well for me. To kind of get school taken care of. And I think, you know, you have to kind of understand all the things that come along with that. It's not just all pros, right? But understanding what you're getting into, but knowing it is an option.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool. I mean, it sounds like you kind of had that internal motivation to want to go to college too. So that kind of helped you out as well to like, you know, be like, I do want to do this, and I'm going to make it happen for myself. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, that's cool. So can you tell, you kind of mentioned like the junior ROTC. So can you kind of describe that program for like our younger listeners?
Yeah. So I think – you know, different schools have different branches. So ours was like an Army Junior ROTC. And like that area of Augusta, Georgia, there's Fort Gordon, which is where my dad was stationed at. So I think if you have an area that's schools are kind of close to like military bases, it's probably more prevalent. Mm-hmm. But basically, like you have like retired or previously served, you know, enlisted and officers that run the program. And it's like an elective in high school. So it's like, you know, you wear the uniform once a week and you learn about, you know, drill and ceremony and how the Army works, and you learn about military history, and you can do these different competitions or do color guard or do, you know, drill team or whatever the case may be. But and you promote, you know, as you go up throughout high school. So, you know, I think it's a great opportunity for kids that, you know, maybe like school isn't the best thing, the thing they're best at, or, you know, sports isn't the best thing that they're at. But like it gave a lot of kids an opportunity to kind of gain confidence and leadership skills and have something that they could be good at and actually have an avenue. Because even if you, you know, you don't go to West Point or you don't get a ROTC scholarship, you still get credit if you were to enlist in the military and you start at a higher rank when you, you know, come out of basic training. Like that. So there's a lot of benefits even past high school for that.
Oh, that's really good. And like you said, you get to feel part of a community, and that's kind of like a big thing in high school. You want to feel like you're part of something, you know, regardless of whatever it is. So
sure.
That's really cool. Sure. Awesome. Awesome. So tell us, so you're in college, you know, you're hooping, you're also you're doing the academic thing too. So were you pre-med the whole time? Did you feel like you wanted to go to med school, or what was your, you know, thought process?
Yeah, that was the goal. I mean, I think you don't know what you don't know, right? Like, oh yeah, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to major in biology. Like, what is this track I have to do? Mm-hmm. That being said, it was tough. You know, our conference at the time, I think we traveled. When we traveled, it was the most spread out conference at the time. So when we traveled, we leave Thursday morning and come back Sunday evening, you know, during conference play. So, you know, I'm over there trying to like figure out how do I do my work ahead of time or bring it in, or how do I do labs or whatever the case may be. And then I was the main reason one semester why we were practicing at 6 a.m. instead of like 3 p.m. because I had like a certain class I had to take, and my coach was not happy about it. Like, it was tough. It was definitely, you know, something that took a lot of work and a lot of effort to get ahead of the game with that, especially, you know, as you're getting up to like your higher level courses and, you know, things that are really awesome times. And some professors were like really cool about it, and other ones were like, yo, I'm not giving you any slack, you know. So it just really is a lot of work and multitasking.
But you made it happen for yourself. Now, how did you like kind of work in the whole like, you know, MCAT? Did you end up like taking a year off, or like what was your next step after, you know, after college, basically? Or did you want to go to the WNBA? That's another question, too.
Yeah, I mean, I think WNBA started like my senior year of high school. So that was a really cool opportunity. I think for me, like, I think you come to the realization like, okay, I'm not like, you know, top whatever. And my college career, you're like, God, I had a lot of injuries, and it was just, we had at least one or two ACLs a year, like never really got on track. It wasn't like, you know, almost made the NCAA tournament one year. But yeah, I think ultimately by the time I made it to my last year, I was like, okay, I think I'm ready to kind of move on and kind of do the next step. And because we were so busy, I did end up taking a year off, and I moved back to where my parents lived. I had my own apartment, got like a job, and was substitute teaching and like, you know, working at like a community center. And that's when I took an MCAT course and tried, you know, took the MCAT and tried to prepare in that way. So yeah, I did take a year off because of that.
That's good. That's good. I mean, sometimes it's the time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It happens a lot. It's happened to a lot of folks we talk to. You know, they needed that year to get grounded, figure out what they wanted to do. So,
for sure.
To do that.
It's one of those things, like, if you need a year off, it's going to happen. Like, whether you do it like by choice or by like force.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. It's better to kind of own it, right?
Yeah. It's like, you know what? I'm going to take a break right here. and I'm gonna come back in a little bit. So that's cool. So how was your application process to medical school? Did you feel like you knew where you wanted to go, or how did that process work out for you?
Yeah, you know, I think I can't even remember the name of the book. Like, whatever the book, the catalog that had like all the med schools in the country or whatever. I was just flipping through, and like I knew there was an opportunity with the military at that point. Like, you could either do a scholarship program, or there was a military medical school that I had heard about. Mm-hmm. And I had like shadowed a few different, you know, docs here and there, and you know, just kind of word of mouth. And I was like, okay, maybe I could do that. So I did, like, I don't know how many I applied to. I realized it was very expensive. So I was like, okay, I gotta really kind of narrow it down and get an idea of, like, where do I want to be? Where do I want to live? And then what opportunities did I have? And then, you know, once I interviewed at, we called it USIS, but it's not like USU, military medical school. I was like, all right, like, this is great. Like, I was able to get out of college, you know, without any debt. So if I could do med school that way, you know, that would be great. And so the difference between like the scholarship program and the med school is, like, the scholarship program, like, you know, you get a stipend, they pay for school, you get a stipend each year, and then you owe like a year for a year, right? So if they give you 4-year scholarship for med school, you pay them back 4 years after your residency. Uh-huh. And for the med school is like, you get paid, like, you get commissioned as a second lieutenant the whole time you're there, and you get paid, you know, like, that's your job in the Army to go to school. Yeah. And then when you're done with your residency, you pay back 7 years. So it's a lot longer commitment to pay back when you're done. But, you know, even the people that kind of did the scholarship program, if they got accepted to other civilian medical schools, you know, some of them still had to incur debt based on whatever their family situation was or financial situation was. So
exactly.
I knew it was a way for me to kind of like kind of avoid that if I could. And I'm still very familiar with my dad, you know, being career military and kind of doing the high school ROTC thing. So it felt like it was a good fit.
Now, that's a big thing. Yeah. Like, you were familiar with like the whole military culture in the world, you know, already. Yeah. So it wasn't like you were like in the middle of like, you know, like a non-military med school and then taking a military scholarship. So you feel like you're amongst everyone who's doing the same thing. So I'm sure that feels like better.
Yeah. It was a little more of a comfortable transition, I think.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. Now, when you were in med school, did you feel like you wanted to do radiology, or were you thinking about orthopedic surgery?
Oh, that's so funny. Definitely ortho. Like, I was like, oh yeah. Like, I gotta be like, I'm going to be with the ortho bros or whatever, but
yeah.
And then I realized, like, man, I don't really like the OR. I was like, it's so uptight in here.
It's so uptight.
Like, yeah, it's stressful. And like, you know, I couldn't stand, like, I didn't really enjoy my surgery rotation. I took it at like a place that was kind of small that didn't do a lot of surgeries anyway, but I was just like, man, this is not for me. I think, you know, I still was thinking ortho because I'm like, I still like this. I didn't want to do like the family medicine sports medicine route. And then when I was out at, so the Army hospital here is called Tripler here in Hawaii. Mm-hmm. When I was out here for rotation, I was taking, I don't even whatever step, what would have been step two, step one? I can't remember. Step two, probably step two. Uh-huh. And I was studying and I was like, oh, I'm gonna do a radiology rotation because I know I'll probably have some time to study and that type of thing. And then I started hanging out with these guys. I'm like, oh my gosh, they really enjoy what they do, right? Mm-hmm. And like, they're not in the hospital all the time. Like, call sucks for them, but like, you know, and you have to read a ton, but like, you could do that at home, or you could do that, you know. It's just like, they enjoyed being there. And I realized, I was like, oh, this is pivotal. And like, everything that happens in the hospital still is very important. Mm-hmm. But also, like, they liked their lives, and they were, like, chilling and having a good time and having lunch together. And I was like, this is not too bad. And I was like, oh, I can do a fellowship in MSK. Okay, I could still be around.
Oh, yeah.
Like, sports. I was like, okay, I can do this. And literally, it was, like, a month before we had to make a decision that I, like, totally pivoted. So.
Wow. And how does that work in the military? Like, when you have to make that decision, like, is it the same thing as, like, in the civilian schools where you choose what you're going to apply to and apply? Or how does it work?
Yeah, so I'm trying to think back. So basically, so it's a little different than the folks that did like the scholarship program at the civilian med schools. I don't know exactly how it works for them, but like, when you go to USIS or Uniformed Services University, like, you're pretty much guaranteed that you're going to get a a military residency. Like, okay, very few will like get deferred out. So that's, there's a comfort in that, right? Like, if so, it takes a little bit of less stress from like the whole match process or whatever, but you still go through a match with, you know, where you can go. So I was, so the way it works is each class is made up, I don't know, let's say about 165, I think, or 185, and maybe 165, like, yeah, maybe 50 or Army, or 65 for Army, then a third is about Navy, and a third is about Air Force, and that's kind of how it's divided up. Everybody kind of branches out, and then you know, you do your rotations at different hospitals along the country, and you have, like, summer rotations. You can do different you know, events or whatever. And so if you're Army, you know you're going to match at, like, an Army hospital unless it's a dual program. So for Army, there's, like, Tripler out in Hawaii. There's San Antonio, which is Brooke Army Medical Center. There's Madigan in Tacoma, Washington. And then there's Walter Reed, or National Naval, you know, conglomerate kind of in the D.C. area where USIS is at. So those are the places, the only four places that they had, you know, radiology residencies. So that's kind of how it is. And you just kind of rank it. And if, you know, if you don't get picked up, then maybe you'll get picked up for like another specialty. It's kind of a weird process.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So, but thankfully, like, I got, you know, Tripler was my first choice, and that worked out really well for me. And I was so used to moving anyway, you know, kind of growing up. So it was kind of like a new adventure.
Oh, that's cool.
How would you say your military experience affects how you practice medicine?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I think it's interesting. I think when you're in the military system, you can kind of, it's not about money, right? Mm-hmm. Like, maybe to like the people that are echelons above you making decisions strategically in Washington or whatever it is, but I think you just do, at the end of the day, you can just do what the patient needs, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't have to be like, oh, let's run this through your insurance. It's just like, okay, do you want to do this? Do we have the capability? Let's do it. Well, and then in the same turn, we can be like, yo, that's not the right thing. This is what we recommend. And it's not like a pushback or, oh, you upset a consultant or you know what I mean? Like, you don't have to worry about that. It's not like you're being rude. It's just like, no, this is how we do it. This is the best thing based on our knowledge and how we take care of the patient, you know? So I think that's a big thing. I learned that, you know, as I graduated from residency and went to my first duty station, I started, you know, kind of doing locums and moonlighting pretty quickly on my off time. And then I realized that was a big difference, you know. Everywhere else, you're kind of like, all right, it's on my list. I guess I'm reading it. I had no input, right? I had no input on whether it was necessary or indicated or, you know. A lot of those conversations don't happen. So I think that's a big difference. You know, I think my deployment medicine's like a whole different thing that kind of teaches you kind of like the whole reason you wanted to get into this in the first place, you know?
Yeah, we got to talk about that.
Yeah. I think, I graduated residency here in 11, and I went to William Beaumont Army Medical Center, which is in El Paso, Texas. Mm-hmm. And it was a great first place to be in attending. Like, you know, they had, you know, when we're at these places, we take care of retirees, the active duty population. Mm-hmm. And we were, you know, on the border. So an underserved community that was easy to help kind of like in the off time as far as locums and things of that nature. But also it was a place that had a lot of residency programs but didn't have a radiology residency program. So, you know, a lot of complex stuff stayed in-house, didn't get pushed. Because if a military place can't take care of something, they push it to the civilian network, right? But a lot of stuff stayed there. So you kind of got to see the complex cases and, you know, make decisions on your own and not have residents right away and that type of thing. So I was there a couple years before I deployed. I deployed to Afghanistan. It was Operation Enduring Freedom. It was a NATO Role 3. So it was a British hospital. The hospital was run by the Brits. And we had some Danes there and Estonians, different kind of smaller countries that would help out and send people to help out. But it was, you know, we had a contingent of an American group that got attached, you know, nurses, doctors, mainly like, you know, ancillary you know, personnel and techs and things of that nature that all kind of got attached to this hospital. Mm-hmm. And I was there after we did like a 3-week train up in England, and then I was there about 6 months. So
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. I mean, so how did you feel like when you were there? How did you feel like when you were like told that you were going to have to go? I guess that's the first question.
Yeah. You know, I think, it had been going on for a while, right? Like this whole, I mean, we kind of get into that, but it had been an enduring thing. And I think when you're in that position and you sign up, you know, I think you realize it's a possibility. And, mm-hmm. you know, my dad deployed in Desert Storm. And so,
yeah,
you just kind of know that it can happen. And if it does and your number's called, then, you know, then you do your best, right? And but I think being there was like the best, it was the best part of my career, even up until this point. Like, it was just about taking care of people. And I think you don't, when you're in that situation, I think especially in the medical side, like, you don't get caught up in the politics of things, right? You don't it's not about like why you're there or what's going on. And you're like, at the end of the day, I think it's, I want to say it's easier, though some people may struggle. It's just about taking care of people.
Yeah.
You know? It doesn't matter who's through that door. You know, we took care of local nationals. We took care of kids. We took care of NATO forces, you know, Afghan army. We had combatants who were, you know, labeled as Taliban or whatever the case may be. I think, you know, it's easy in the sense that you just fall back on like what you're supposed to do, right? Like as just signing up to do this job. And, you know, as for me, like just kind of as a person, right? Like it's like, all right, well, you know, it wasn't about training. It wasn't about hospital, like, you know, emails. And it was nothing about that. It's just like you go down there and it's just to take care of folks.
Yeah, it's not like it was just pure, which is nice.
That's right. And I'm exploring, you know, some of the things at the USU. It's like, you know, you're learning to care for those in harm's way.
Like, exactly.
I mean, and how serious do you take that? Very seriously, right? And whoever comes to that door, you're gonna help them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think sometimes, you know, those phrases or terms, especially in the military, kind of get thrown around as cliche, but like that really is what it's about. Mm-hmm. And I will say, like, you know, I just got lucky in that experience. Like, it really was, you know, sometimes as a radiologist, you may get deployed somewhere and you're like, it's not busy. And that's a good thing for patients, right? But like, your skills kind of whatever. And it's like, you're not, you're just kind of there. And I think the way the Brits ran this hospital, like, it's interesting. Like, the radiologists are really a part of the trauma team. Like, you're in the trauma bay, you're doing fast exams on everybody. And then you go back into like a reading room where we had 2 64 slice scanners, right? Like CTs and like the stations in between the two of them, they're just alternating patients. You got 20, 30 people in there, surgeons,
wow.
You know, medical directors, like, you know, you're just reading head to toe, you know, Shan scans or trauma scans. And like, you're just calling it out as you go, you know, and people start peeling off and going to the OR as they hear what's pertinent to them. And then, you know, the plastic surgeons are hanging around and want to hear about the little tiny things in the little tiny spaces. But it's interesting, right? Like, and depending on who you have there, like, that's the care you provide. Like, we happen to have a cardiothoracic surgeon, US guy, that was on with our group. And we had a kid that, you know, was shot through and through in the chest, and he was able to save her life. And depending on whether we had that capability or not, depending on who was rotating out there, that may have not been the case, you know? And like, so, you know, I think it's tough because, and I was there during summer months. It was summer months, just like anywhere else in the big city, trauma's hopping, right? Yeah. And so it was busy, but I think I learned so much, right? Like, it was interesting just doing like combat radiology and being part of that team and making decisions. And I learned a lot about myself, but just like at the end of the day, like, this is what we signed up for, was really to just take care of people. It's not about, wasn't about the money, and it wasn't about like notoriety and like, or, you know, publishing papers or doing, you know, hospital training or whatever, you know. It was just about being there by the person next to you and like realizing you were there for a common goal, just who's taking care of whoever was coming through the door.
Man, that's awesome.
I just want to highlight something you said there. Combat radiology. Yeah. Like, that's just next level, man. I thought I was going through it at 11-1 Trauma Center, like, you know, the middle of nowhere. But combat radiology, I'm sure you saw some crazy stuff.
I did. Yeah. I did. You know, I will say, you know, it's like when we were in England, we do these like train ups, right? It's like you practice how you fight, right? Or practice how you play, however you want to look at it. And, you know, they had a mock-up hospital in England that was just like the hospital we went to in Afghanistan. So when you walk in, it was very familiar. You're just running drills, like, nonstop, right? And, like, mass cow situations, different things like that. But, like, being in the middle of that and seeing everything, and actually, like, being, we were part of, we got briefs from, like, the medical director about, like, what kind of operations were going on and how many casualties we might expect. Or here's, like, you know, somebody was sniping out people. Or, like, we were part of those intelligence briefs because it informs, you know, what type of patients you may have. So it was, like, it was wild. And I, you know, my first patient, we had, like, what we call, like, a left C, right C, right? Like, you come there and I'm the radiologist I'm replacing. There was two of us. One was US and we were there for 6 months. And then you had the Brits who rotated out like every 3 months. So we went through like three of them to one time while we were there.
American stuff.
Yeah. I'm like, all right, man. I'm okay. They're like, yeah, keep, you know, they get it, right? They're like, nah, we need some R&R.
Yeah, exactly.
But you're there and you're on 24 on, 24 off, right? And if there's more than like three, what we call category A or like high, you know, high traumas, high level traumas that come in, there's more than three, then both of you get called in. Because you're doing the fast and then you're taking turns, you know, reading the scanners, you know, reading off the scanner. So, you know, it really was in that sense, like, you know, combat radiology. But the gal I was relieving, we had a couple days overlap, right, of left seat, right seat. And I was like, all right, cool, like I'll do the next trauma that comes through. And my very first patient was a double amputee, you know, from IED explosion. Like, okay, well, I guess this is real, right? Like, I mean, right? There's no like, oh, okay, the first patient has appendicitis, right? Like, it was okay, all right, well, I guess this is what we're doing, you know. So yeah, and so, you know, I say combat radiology is kind of cheesy. We had these little badges made for our uniforms, whatever, but you know, you really felt
not at all.
But you felt like you were doing like, okay, this is why I signed up to, like, if I was going to be in this environment, like, regardless of what I felt about why we were there and, you know, all those other things that decisions made above you, you know, if you were just there to, like, just to help people, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh man. That's so cool. That's really cool. So tell us, you went from left seat, right seat, combat radiology to deciding to want to do a fellowship. So tell us about how that, you know, thought process was and how doing a fellowship was and what you do it in.
Yeah. So what's interesting is like, so the Army or also the military in general is just a little different, right? So the way fellowships work is depending on the needs of the military and particularly for me, like the Army and what's going on, like, you know, it's a rank system, right? So maybe there's two, like, for instance, do you apply like during your, I don't know, end of second year or third year, so you 2 years later you start right after, ideally right after residency, which is kind of really common in civilian programs, like most people do a fellowship,
right?
There's just two slots for everybody. And the year I applied, like, it, I don't know if you guys are, I don't know how old you guys are, but like back then, 2000, I guess, would have been like 8, 9, like the market was crazy. Like there wasn't a lot of jobs. So staff radiologists in the military who were like, oh, do I get out or do I stay in and do fellowship? Were like, I'm staying in and doing fellowship, you know? So when those guys apply, by default, it doesn't even matter. It's a point system, right? Like, so if you're a staff radiologist or an attending, like you already have more points than a resident, you know, applying. And then there's the other things like publications and letters and all those things that count, you know, as points. So my first year, like it's time for me to apply. I knew I wanted to do MSK and I didn't get it. You know, I went and interviewed. I can't remember. I definitely interviewed at UCSD. They were like, hey, and the way it works is the military sponsors your fellowship, right? So you're basically free labor, like, for civilian facilities.
Oh, yes.
So at least, like, there's a benefit there. And then another benefit about being, like, in the military is you're paid, you know, as an officer. So usually, like, you know, the residency pay is pretty decent. But then, like, as soon as you become staff, like, that's where the disparity, that's where it's, like, a huge discrepancy, right? If you're still in the military, you're not making a lot of money. So comparatively speaking. So, yeah, so there's a benefit for civilian institutions. So that's one of the benefits if you're going to be in the military. It's like, oh, okay, I might be able to get a fellowship, you know, at a place that's pretty well known, because maybe, like, you know, they'll just want my hustle, right? Like, no, I'm a decent person. I'm a good radiologist, but, like, I'm going to hustle. So it's an extra body. But so I got picked up, and I was, you know, but, like, I didn't get the slot from the Army. And I'm like, gosh, like, what am I going to do? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, those couple years, that third and fourth year, it was just, like, people just decided they weren't getting out. And people that were, you know, from a rank order standpoint, were able to get those slots. So
when I got
my first duty station, I was like, you know what? This is blessing in disguise. Like, I'm gonna learn to be a generalist and kind of do a little bit of everything. And, you know, I did that deployment in my first 5 years at my, you know, first duty station. And then I actually, after the 5 years there, I came back to where I trained and was staff for 3 years and ultrasound section chief. And then I decided I was at my commitment. My commitment was up. And I was like, you know, I'd always thought maybe I would retire. Just with my dad's history, I knew the benefits of having retirement at a relatively young age. And and then I was like, okay, I'm going to apply for fellowship now. Like, I'll stay in and do it that way. So now I was the staff applying. but, it worked out with my payback and things of that nature. So, yeah, I just knew I always liked MSK. I liked, you know, sports. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, that kind of where it led me, and ended up, you know, staying in a little longer to do the fellowship. But and then I ended up going to West Point after that and was in charge of the radiology department there. But I went there because, actually, and this is kind of what you'll see with the military, like, small place, you know, lots of relationships. The guy that was orthopedics on my deployment, he was in charge of the sports fellowship for ortho there.
Oh, wow. And wanted
me to come. So I was able to go there and do teaching, kind of get involved, be at the football games, and, you know, just, you know, it's like being
that's so cool.
Yeah, so I did fellowship at Stanford, and one of the reasons I wanted to go there is just because how much involvement they had with the athletes. Obviously, like, Stanford athletes, like, a lot of them end up being Olympians anyway. But so working with them and then working with the 49ers at the time, like, it was just an awesome experience. So to be able to continue and work with high level athletes was just fun to do that at West Point too.
That's so cool.
I want to ask, how did you navigate some of the folks that maybe weren't used to seeing someone like yourself in these circles? Did you experience a lot of that? And or some of that? And if you did, you know, what equipped you to kind of deal with it? Like, you know, I could imagine, you know, you read articles, you hear different things, but you walked it. How did you navigate?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I guess I have to get you kind of, like, to narrow that down a little bit, because there could be so many levels I could go with this. And in what respect, I guess?
Well, you know, you're a physician, you're an African American woman in medicine in the armed forces. What, you know? Tell me. I mean, I know that you must have faced some challenges along the way.
Yeah, you know, I think, I think it's, that's tough.
I know, it's a bit broad, but, you know, some.
No, you're right, though, you're right. I think I always tried to make it feel like, in my mind, that I was supposed to be there, like, I was supposed to be in that room, I was supposed to be at that table.
Yes.
Not always successful with that. And, like, you know, imposter syndrome is a real thing. Uh-huh. You know, there's times where, like, and to be honest, like, radiology, like, anything in medicine, but, like, I'm humbled every day.
Yeah.
Like, what we do is not easy.
No.
You know? And, like, as soon as you feel like you're feeling yourself, like, it's like, oh, okay. Yeah. I still got, I miss that. Right? Yeah, like, it's like, golly, like, you feel like you're, you know.
The highlights are on Sports Center.
What's that?
So the highlights and lowlights are on SportsCenter.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly. Right. So like what we do is very humbling. But I think, you know, knowing that, like, I felt like, and it's funny because I talk about this with friends, just like even taking it back as far as sports, right? Like, that's where you like learn like confidence and like working with others and like winning and losing and how to deal with those things. And it really mm-hmm. does inform like life, mm-hmm. you know. And it doesn't mean like everybody gets a scholarship or everybody's the top or whatever, but like I think the things you, the foundation you lay happens very early with that. And like you learn how to deal with some of those things. And you know, I've met really ignorant people, you know, and it's not you know, a secret, like the military has a problem with sexual harassment, yeah. and sexual assault.
Yeah.
And so I think just trying to be like, hold my head up high and be confident about where I'm at, and realize when I see people who aren't that in that headspace or in that frame of mind, and kind of stepping in and being the voice for some of folks like that. But yeah, I think, you know, just doing your best to realize, okay, I'm well trained. I work hard more than anything. And I think that's what my parents instilled in me. Like, I'm not the smartest. I'll be the first to say it, but like, you're not going to out hustle me. Right. You're not going to like out grind. Right. And like, and unfortunately, I think in a lot of arenas, we all folks, you know, have to do that. You know, the whole twice as hard, right? Yeah. Like mm-hmm. just to be considered where you're at. Sometimes it, in people's minds, it takes you doing above and beyond just to kind of be on an equal playing field. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I said I hear you're tenacious. You know, when we talk to a student athlete, there is a common thread.
Yes.
Tell you what, like you all are tenacious and you don't back down like very easily. And
not at all.
I hear that. That's awesome. I'm very impressed with you, what you've been able to do and how you've been able to do it. And I thank you. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah,
no, I appreciate that. Yeah. Thank you.
Awesome. And you're like, yeah, like you said, you're just not going to get outworked. You know, all this other stuff's whatever, but no one's going to outwork you and you're going to, you know, get the job done, which is, in the end, the most important part, you know? So that makes total sense. So we appreciate you making the time, but real quick, I'm going to ask you one last question before I let you get out of here. So tell us, what would you, tell someone who's having like a tough time in like undergrad or med school or even high school or even like an athlete maybe? Like, what would you tell them to help them, you know, get through and, you know, make it to the next step and potentially, you know, go into healthcare?
Yeah, you know, I think it's just stick-to-itiveness, right? Like realizing what's important to you and like what you want to do and accomplish, and realize that like it's going to be like those ups and downs, and you just kind of try and your hardest not to get too high when the highs are great, mm-hmm. and not to get too low when the lows are bad. And hopefully, you know, I've been very blessed to have people around me who have been supportive throughout my journey. And I know not everybody has that, but hopefully the folks that are in a good space can find people who, you know, who are having those hard times, and people who are realizing when they've gotten to a certain place, they can be that person to somebody else. But I think it's just, you know, keeping your head down, grinding, making the main thing. And, you know, realizing that you are supposed to be there. If you want to be there, you're supposed to be there, and doing everything you can, you know, to put yourself in a good position just to accomplish your goal.
Love that.
Oh, I love it. That's awesome. That's awesome advice. That's so true. Just got to keep to it. Just stick to it. And just like you said, so. Well, we appreciate you making the time. This is awesome. We learned a lot. And big ups to you for making it happen for yourself and out here in Hawaii just chilling.
I'm telling you, just enjoy Hawaii.
Yeah, it's you know, I can't lie. Every day is great. I can't lie. I talked to Brooke and those guys. I'm like, come out, man. It's a good vibe, and the people here are amazing, and the culture is amazing and very welcoming. Yeah, it's a good vibe.
Oh, that's awesome. It's great to hear. So we appreciate you making the time, and this was awesome. And thank you everybody for listening. And until next time, stay low and keep firing.
Please subscribe, rate, and review on iTunes or wherever you get your pods.
Oh, well, thank you. I was hoping I wasn't too chatty.
No, there's no such thing.